and life for free. But you can give them to the birds and bees. I want money.
Hello, welcome back to Dice and Giants. I'm Tom Howe. She's AV on the board. S&P futures up 17. Dow futures down 137. NASDAQ futures up 54, which is better than Friday. 600 points to the downside. The big news this morning was Hang Seng was down. Not Hang Seng. The Shanghai was down 7.7%, but it wasn't worse than that. So they've been closed for a week. Chinese government had pledged like $132 billion to stem any kind of huge tide to the downside. I don't know if they had to use it or not. They probably used some of it. Frank, you with us, bud?
I most definitely am, Tom.
So last night, this will shock Stocks and Jacks listeners, probably more than the virus, is AV and her hench lady, Tatiana, actually were out at a bar and watched the Super Bowl last night, and she'll be able to report on every play of every quarter because she's got it firmly etched in her mind.
I'm impressed.
So am I.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't
better than me.
Better than me. It took me a while. I was with a bunch of people. We were over to Dr. J's, and of course he cooked his chili, which is very good, but let's just say for his somewhat North Shore 1%er crowd, it might be a tad too spicy, but I love it. he likes cooking it, and people brought all kinds of stuff. It was a great crowd, nice time. I had trouble finding out until the end of the commercials who half the commercials were for at $1 million a pop. Didn't you?
Yeah, it was difficult.
Is that the first time you saw, I mean, we have to point out innovation, that like a Procter & Gamble grabbed a minute, but then they ran those little tiny, like 10-second ones for like six of their products? I thought that was kind of neat. Just kind of remind people.
Yeah, that was the first time I saw that. With Febreze and everything else, Bounty.
Kind of reminds people, you know, all the different stuff that some of these companies do. I always thought Procter & Gamble was a pretty well-run company. Anyway.
Well, back in our youth, it was renowned for its marketing. I think they used to call it Procter & God.
Yeah, well, it's, you know, what struck me about those guys in McDonald's, as great as some of the management is at McDonald's, I've always thought for a long time that McDonald's been pretty good, Frank. Is that they never really, and General Motors had some of the same issues back when they had a bunch of car lines. Well, they still have a few, but it always struck me that Procter & Gamble could put managers on products, and they really worked on those. Like McDonald's never could grab a good person and put them at like Chipotle. You know, Chipotle had to break away from McDonald's to do real well. You know what I'm saying? Where Procter & Gamble has always managed to get people from Tide to Bounty or whatever, and the people worked on those lines without compromising the other lines, it seemed. They actually could work very independently on the products, which is really kind of a sign of good management, I think, when you have a lot of products like that. Just saying.
Well, they basically invented brand management. You
right.
Know, focusing on an individual brand.
But it's more difficult than you think, is I guess my point. Because a lot of people...
Oh, yeah. It never really even occurred to me that you had to be careful of your partners.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was really tough for, like, Oldsmobile to compete against Pontiac, you know. Because General Motors would always have one division that was slipping. Then they put a good guy over there. Then he'd kind of kick ass against the other divisions for a while. And another one was slipping. And it was sort of the same thing. Seemed like they could never all move forward together. Same with McDonald's. I mean, they're just good at McDonald's. I mean, whenever they try to do something else, they purposely don't put the good guy over there or lady or whatever. I don't know. So what do you make of, we got all kinds of, I don't even know where to start this morning. We got the caucuses. We had your tweet. you know, sometimes, why don't you let everybody know what the tweet was from our POTUS.
Oh, he was congratulating the Kansas City Chiefs and the citizens of the great state of Kansas.
Not realize. Well, I guess there is a Kansas City, Kansas, but it's not.
Well, there is, but I was probably corrected in about the third or fourth grade when I made that mistake.
Well, when you tweet from the can in the morning, it's very difficult. It's hard to get a proofreader, shall we say.
A Oh, gosh. It's amazing. It has been corrected, and, of course, everybody's jumping to the man's defense, saying, yes, there is a Kansas City, Kansas. You know, there's more Chiefs fans in Johnson County, Kansas, than there are anywhere else, and it's like, oh, come on.
Yep. So what do you, have you been, I know you've been doing some work this weekend on the coronavirus. What's your latest in relation to the markets? Did you see that thing I sent with the, in fact, I'm going to dig it up here, the New York
Times. How much each player makes?
Well, that, yes, but the, what did you
see? It's like Tom Ricketts wrote that one.
God, no kidding.
That deal.
Did you see the quote from Ogden Nash?
No.
Progress may have been all right once, but it's gone on way too long. What do you think of that one, AV? I sent you the one about the New York Times did a very interesting list here regarding the New York Times regarding all the different viruses and the different bad things that you can get essentially, and they've got this kind of, how's this for Monday morning? They got this like log normal curve regarding the coronavirus, and it's pretty interesting. It lets you know of all these different diseases, like which is the most deadly and which is the most contagious. You know, spreads faster on kind of one axis and more deadly on the vertical axis, and it's pretty interesting. I think they still think the most virulent spread disease around is still measles, by far. One person.
Did you have measles when you were a kid?
Yep. Both kinds. I remember the week long one more. But you decide how contagious something is by the amount of people one person has it. The average, in other words, if you have a common cold, you normally infect 1.5 other people. If you have measles, you usually infect 15 other people. That's pretty up there.
Wow.
Yeah. So the coronavirus looks like you infect between 1.5 and 3.5 million people, or 3.5 people, which puts you way below measles, but right about where SARS is, right about where polio is, right about where the Spanish flu is. But the thing that this thing has going for it so far is the fatality rate's below 3%. And transmissions between 1.5
It's been 3% of 3,090,000?
Well, it's considering that most people, including myself, don't have on the tip of your tongue the fact that 50,000 people a year die from the regular flu. Not necessarily from the flu itself, but if anybody gets it who's compromised in any way, kind of if you have chemo or you have a cold or you have something else, you have other kinds of issues. If you have any kind of renal issues or anything like that, the flus can be very deadly. So the Spanish flu, which was in 1918, even though it might have started in Kansas, 10% of the people died. Polio, 10% of the people died. SARS, 10% of the people died. Small parts.
Well, polio was interesting because it hit the young.
Right.
The Spanish flu hit people in their 20s and 30s.
MERS, I don't remember that one. What the hell is MERS? I mean, I don't remember the name, but with bird flu.
I think that's the skinned infection.
Well, isn't it? Ebola and bird flu knock off over 50% of the people.
Wow.
Smallpox knocks off like 45% of the people. So this is a pretty interesting graph here. But the thing this one's got going for it is, I don't think, and I don't know what's going on in China, but the people that are outside of China, it seems like if you're cared for pretty well, there's only one person that's died, right?
In the States?
No,
yeah,
well, somebody died in. I thought somebody died in the Philippines this morning or someplace.
Oh yeah, that's right.
It seems like, but now this person in Thailand, of course, some of my extreme right wingers this weekend were telling me that this one of the doctors in Thailand has found that a combination of two of the AIDS drugs and HIV drugs and one regular antiviral pretty much cures it. So of course, somebody immediately talked to me this weekend about how, because the AIDS drugs work on it, that it had to be some sort of a governmental sponsored biological weapon type of thing that got out. I don't know if I believe that. Because if you're going to do a biological weapon, you'd kill more than 1.5% of the people, you would think.
Well, they did a pretty crappy job if it's a biological weapon and it only has a 3% hit rate.
Right, so what we have Microsoft closing virtually all their offices and stores in China until, or at least in that area, until middle of February, at the maybe the end of February. We have the airlines not flying there. What do you make? I mean, I don't know if I've ever seen it quite at this scale economically, Frank. I don't know how to capsulize it enough for my trading yet. I mean, would help me here. I mean, I was.
It may be a biological warfare.
See, I got you
to
going.
Be, cover for the U.S. to shut them down economically. I heard last night on the radio. I listened to the radio all night, sort of in the background, and. Truck companies are running out of truck parts. They're having a rough time repairing trucks.
Well, a lot of stuff is made over there, right?
Well, isn't that where they make everything now, isn't it?
No, I don't know about that.
I know, but people talk that way.
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't know. I don't know. Where more like Moog's factories and people like that, are they in China? I don't even know.
I don't know, but I wouldn't be surprised if engine parts are made over there, you know, brakes or things like that.
Are you talking about assemblies of new trucks or for?
No. For repair.
Okay. Well, you know, you do wonder if somebody's.
It seems to be pretty quick though for there to be a problem though. I'm skeptical.
Well, you know, Frank, this is the problem with this. So this is a problem that Boeing is having. I mean. When we were, I say from my experience at Pullman, I keep bringing that up is because, you know, it's an experience in something that goes wrong, essentially the Superliner program. When you start going to just-in-time inventory, all of a sudden something shuts down or somebody screws up, you got a problem. I mean, it either all works or it doesn't. It's like the human body. Either your brain's telling the heart to pump and everything, or else if one thing messes up, you're sort of screwed up because there's no waste there, you know what I'm saying?
Well, if you don't have oxygen, you're screwed. And parts are the oxygen of manufacturing.
Well, yeah, and I, you know, what I'm saying is, if you have quote like the first one that was that I know of, that was a serious just-in-time design plant, because Pullman was supposed to be sort of like that. But that's in the superliners, you want to get your stuff a little bit ahead of time so you have it because you have people there. But a real just-in-time is. You know, the two trucks that would pile off a truck or rail car the day that you dropped a car on them, right? Or passenger car. Well, when Pullman, when the thing got slowed up, of course, we had to make a railroad track to hold all the trucks. There they were lined up as far as the eye could see, 500 of them, or 580 of them to be exact.
Wow.
We had seats all over the place. I mean, so there's people you could turn off and people you couldn't turn off. But if somebody's doing a seat run exactly to your spec, it's not like you're buying, but now if it's standard switches or bolts or headlights or something, they could just sell to other people for a while, and when you're ready to pick yours up again, they start sending some to you. You know, but the first plant I know of, Frank, and correct me on this one, was the Chrysler plant at Belvedere, where they literally didn't even build warehousing. They just, whenever something showed up, it went right out on the floor, and you plunked it in the Chrysler, right? Whatever car they were building there at the time. But all of a sudden, one guy has to screw up, and the whole thing messes up, right? And there's got to be how many thousand parts on a car? You probably inventory the fasteners at every station, so you never run out of bolts. But the fenders are being, I think they were what a day or two ahead of the manufacturing, not much more than that, because I know they didn't handle them twice. However many fenders they use per day, say they had twice that money, they were stored at the spot where you stuck the fenders on the car. Isn't that the whole idea?
Yeah, I worked for IBM, gosh, in the late 70s and early 80s in sales, and what I sold was manufacturing systems. I was Mapix certified back in the day when that meant something, and we were selling just in time.
Well, and IBM was a big part of that whole thing.
Oh, it was, and I was in grad school and working at Allied Stamping when they made bumpers for everybody in the old Studebaker stamping plant, and that was just when just-in-time showed up. You know, you'd fill up trucks, and they would head off to different plants in the Midwest, truck plants, car plants.
Well, what, so... How many, just out of curiosity, how many days inventory at the station would you keep? Could be more than like one or two.
I have no idea because I was, on that, I was low enough on the food chain. A lot of what I was doing was literally smaller parts, selling to people like, Lear Siegler. And so Lear Siegler had just in time on parts coming in, and they had just in time from, Ford, Chrysler, and GM going out. I mean, it's really quite involved.
One of the
this was at the birth of it. So
one of the assistant plant managers at Pullman during the Vietnam War, talk about just not in time. His job. We worked for Lear Siegler. This guy's 22 years old, right? And but he was a manufacturing engineer, I believe. So his job was, you know, whoever was making the planes, whoever was making the. Were we running the planes we had over there? The F-6? Was it the... What did we have over the Phantom?
I have no idea. I thought it was the F-15,
it was the Phantom.
Last person to talk about planes.
It was the Phantom jet, I believe. But anyway, whatever new generation of jet they'd send over there, the thing, just to get delivery, just to get paid, they'd get them over there, but they weren't ready to fly, right? Imagine that. So Lear Siegler did some of the work for the... I use the term... auto term, the dashboard, the instrument panel.
Mm-hmm.
So some of the instruments weren't in the thing yet. So this guy's job was, you know, he wasn't an Army guy, but he was an employee of Lear Siegler. He'd stay on the base somewhere, and he'd head out every morning to the various spots where there were planes, airfields, and so forth, and or wherever the staging areas were, and he'd go and he'd plunk four or five of these new... instrument panel things in there, and all of a sudden, you know, they could fire up the plane and go. And he said, you drive these, you'd read the map, which ones were supposedly demined and which ones weren't. And you get on a road that everybody said was safe, and people are shooting at you. And you get on one, you say, the hell with it, I'll take the other road, and the other road's fine, people are waving at you. He said, it was so screwed up, it was scary. I mean, it literally was scary. but anyway, Lear Siegler was a. Are they still around?
Yeah, they are. I think they were also real big in seating, among other things.
Really?
Yeah.
I mean, they did all kinds of parts for big complex machines like airplanes and stuff. Honeywell does the same
thing. Oh yeah, and they did. Think of all the other companies that were around. Clark Equipment, Buchanan, was doing a lot of just in time.
Well, how many parts you think around a? A 777, a million? I mean, somebody's got to be making this stuff.
Oh, no kidding. Yeah. Or a big front-end loader. A road paver. I mean, it was amazing. The heavy manufacturing in the Midwest.
All right, Frank, we got to shift gears a little bit. This morning I got Tesla's up. Now, why everybody thinks there's continue to sell cars in China, I don't know. But anyway, that stock must be short covering or something. I got Apple down. 388, they were down heavy on Friday, I mean, 600 points down. Transportation average just got walloped. I mean, everything was just getting hammered. I mean, but Apple was
industrial
down.
Industrial metals have been walloped for almost 2 weeks.
I mean, with all the crap about China, the tariffs, and their bad guys, and Trump fighting one of them, even though he says they're friends, this has been theater now for pushing 2 years. If these guys actually have a shutdown for a month or two, how do you come back from that? How do the people? What is this going to say to the? And I was talking to different groups this weekend. Why am I, just because I read so much about it, Frank? Why am I so concerned about this euro dollar denominated Chinese debt? I really believe that if we have another debt crisis, that's where it's going to start. Am I all wet with this or not? I mean, because I don't think the Chinese government cares about it, and I think whenever the Chinese currency goes down, that means the interest has to be paid in dollars goes up, and I got to believe the economy in China's got to be tanking here. I mean, nobody's going anywhere. Right? I mean,
it still grew at what, 7% last year?
The what?
9%? The Chinese economy is
still
growing.
Well, they claim they grow. They grow. But when you move people from the agrarian places to the city, you start counting stuff you never used to count. Right?
Oh, boy, and we've talked about the special government way of counting.
Well, yeah, I don't really believe...
For every single index that's out there.
Well, they got to be worse than we are. And we can't trust
all
people.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah. I don't...
But we're working on it.
Yeah, we're working on it. we're working on it. We don't know what we're... We don't know what, and we got the caucuses today. I don't... Why do we have this issue with Bernie Sanders that the guy's been independent forever? Why is he running as an independent? Why didn't Trump run as an independent? Instead of co-opting
the party.
Because
he needed to destroy the Republican Party as we know it.
Yeah. Interesting to see how those guys pick up the pieces, how he's gone, either this year or 4 years from now. I mean, everything they stood for is pretty much gone in terms of it.
Except for being, you know, white males. That's still pretty going pretty strong.
Well, yeah, I suppose. But, well, I'd be interested, but I don't know. I mean, Bernie, I don't get this whole thing. The guy who sounds the best to me, or two people who sound the best, have no chance. The guy from South Bend and, what's her name, Kamala Harris, seem like the smartest. But they're not going
to... Oh, Yang makes sense, too, when you listen to him. He's fairly articulate.
Now, what if you were a tie manufacturer and he won? How happy would you be with that? Nobody wears any ties anymore. You're out of business. Even Jerry Garcia ties would be out.
I have a few of those.
So do I. I love them. Anyway. But how do you trade this? Do you start picking individual stocks? I mean, this morning, just looking at the stuff that's down, we got 3M up a little bit. They make masks, and the masks are sold out worldwide, for God's sake. Apple's down 325, but virtually nothing else. You got XOM. Goldman Sachs is up $1.62. Nike's up $1.45. Why Nike would be up, I have no clue, but they are. We've got Verizon's up. I mean, that's Visa, up a little bit, 103. I don't know. I mean, I honestly wish I knew more about the interview.
Microsoft's up... 70 cents, half a percent.
Yeah, you know that. Well, they have, they're the world's sneakiest monopoly, with all the other people get in trouble. So we got what? We got Google tonight, right? Is their earnings?
Mm-hmm.
I got them up $13 this morning. I think their earnings are tonight, aren't they?
I don't know. I've been on strike right now. I don't trust my spidey sense is off right now for trading.
Well, how can it not be when you've got second biggest economy in the world going basically offline, for God's sake. You just wonder, this stuff, on one hand you say this stuff happens, okay? On the other hand, you never really know the consequences. I mean, 9/11, clearly we didn't want to have happen, never want to have happened again. But some of the repercussions, Frank, I still to this day cannot fathom. United Airlines is in business for 65 years. They couldn't fly for, what, 2 weeks, and they're out of business?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you look at this and you say, you know, China is a huge, you know, evolving country. They have a lot of good things going for them. Their growth is solid. They've got manufacturing facilities that are fairly new. They've got a lot of good things. I mean, they really do have a lot of good stuff going for them. They have a very well-educated population, thanks to us, pretty much. Right? I mean...
taxpayers of the state of Illinois.
Yeah, but the weird part is, you never really know how. Hang, would you have guessed in 2008 that said something's going to happen in this country, and airlines are going to be essentially shut down for 2 weeks? United Airlines is going to go. Every shareholder of United Airlines is going to be TAPO. I mean, I would never have guessed that the thing would go to zero. I would have thought that there would be enough that they could hang for 2 weeks. I mean, but how do you know with this dollar-denominated debt, regular debt, all this stuff? How do you know how many Chinese companies are hanging by a thread anyway because of all the tariff stuff or whatever? Or maybe there aren't any. I mean, how does somebody on our end, or how does an investor, somebody trades for PTI or whatever? How do you have a clue who those places are and who they're going to affect?
You know, I mean, well, they've been warning us for years about phony books.
What I'm saying, how do you
American accountants have about phony bookkeeping in China?
But I'm saying we didn't do a very good job predicting who was that liable on this end.
No.
Let alone over there. I mean, it's really hard to figure out, you know, who the hell has a balance sheet. I mean, are the buildings on the balance sheet really worth what people say they are or not? I mean, in this whole morass of trading and stuff that we do, I mean, and me for other people, that's why I'm always very, very concerned and very careful in protection and things like that, because any little thing can happen, and you have no idea who's really all that liable. I mean, we have every one of these companies here. Everybody's convinced on TV, oh, man, the balance sheets are the best they have. Bull bleep. No, they're not. They're not as good as they were a few years ago because a lot of these guys are borrowing money to buy their own stock back. So, I mean, if all of a sudden...
In addition, we're changing rules
right
across the board and everything. I mean, we're relaxing all these banking rules put in after 2008. I hear people whine, about, including bankers. Well, you know, it's so difficult now. Well, every single one of those rules is into a response to a screw-up by a bank
right,
or the entire industry.
But you know, as well as anybody, being in an exchange, that none of the rules that come out, they're just gleams in the designer, meaning regulator's eyes. None of those rules are designed to prevent the next crisis or even the last crisis.
No.
Yeah, I mean, yes, you can say, as our Fed is doing right now, which is mind-boggling to me, you can say the solution is we pour a bunch of money into banks, so they've got $1 trillion on deposit here. And, oh, by the way, we don't let them trade or give out any loans. Well, Frank, that's no solution. It's taking out an industry. That's a bureaucrat's solution. Don't take any risk. Yeah, but that's what I do for a living. You know, I mean, anyway, S&P futures up 15, NASDAQ futures up 45. Be right back, Stacks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to factor in the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other life decision. Your brain is smarter than your gut, and that's why you owe it to yourself to read Luckbox. We've made it easy because Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with timely, actionable trading ideas and equips you with savvy investing tactics you don't already know, all while exploring how to live your best life through music, spirits, food, sports, travel, fitness, and a whole lot more. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on controlling their financial futures. It's for overachievers and alpha types who don't buy into Wall Street's investment gurus. It's for mavericks who believe in life, luxury, and the pursuit of happiness. It's for you. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager with PTI and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the CME, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is available to you. We are offering three research newsletters: the Daily News, our Daily Stock and Futures Trading Recommendations, and our twice-weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks. Each of these reports are available via email. To benefit from the same research professionals have used for more than 3 decades, call me and get 2 weeks free with a 1 month subscription, or you may also call me for a free portfolio analysis to see how we can work together to build your future. I'm David Andelman, president of DAX Research. Call toll free 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional floor traders at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, including 4 past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. I'm pleased to announce that I'm now on the premises of PTI Securities and Futures as a research analyst and a securities and futures trader. I am now offering 2 of our daily newsletters, the Daily News Report and our Daily Stock and Futures Trading Recommendations, both emailed daily to subscribers before the market opens. To benefit from the same research professionals have used for more than 3 decades, go to our website, www.dacsresearch.net, to obtain the tool that meets your trading and investment needs. Or call me and get 2 weeks free with a 1 month subscription. I'm David Andelman, president of DAX Research. You can call toll free 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures trading have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom House. She's AV on the board. We have Mr. Frank Fahey hanging out for a couple minutes, and we have Mr. John Flanagan waiting in the wings. S&P futures up 1575. A lot of people thought we would be down this morning, but China was pretty much as predicted. So we were down huge on Friday in anticipation, so I don't think the China opening, which I'll get to in a second, was as bad as people thought. So Nasdaq futures up 49. We have the Dow is up 134. Individual stock movement, Apple down another $1.71. Pretty much the other ones are to the upside here. We've got Goldman Sachs up 162. So nothing really major. Nike up 150, which I don't see how those guys continue to sell stuff. Maybe they had some players yesterday, I guess. Over in Europe, we've got, remember, all these guys were down heavy Friday. DAX up 11.1%, so they're not much of a bounce there. FTSE up 28.4%. Those guys Brexited on Friday. So now we're trying to figure out what they're going to do with it, but they officially did the Brexit on Friday, but with all this other stuff going on, nobody even thought about it. CAC around up 11.2%. It's not what happens, it's when it happens. Nikkei down 233, another 1%, so they're 22,971. Shanghai down 229, that's 7.7%. The Chinese government, a letter we know yesterday, they had 1.2 trillion yuan, or 173, I believe, billion dollars worth to inject into the system, read the market, if they needed it yesterday. So I don't know if they did or they didn't. I don't know if we'll ever find out on that one. Hang Seng up 44.1%. Bonds 1.54. So they're still, the bonds are up, the rates are down. Bund minus 0.43. In Japan is minus 0.06. So they're, after being above board for a couple of days, they're now minus 0.06 again. Oil up 16 cents, but still under 52 now. 51.72. Brent 56.46. Natural gas 187. None of this stuff is going anywhere. RBOB 150, and we've got gold. It's down 390, but still 1584 hanging in there. Silver down 22 cents, 1779. Copper finally up a penny at 252, but that's pretty lies. China, here's the headline. China accuses U.S. of spreading fear and panic over coronavirus outbreak. Out of all the things that could very well be our fault, I don't think this is one of them. Anyway, V, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
Good morning, my friends. Happy Monday. Hope you had a great weekend. Enjoy the Super Bowl party. For weather, we have 37 degrees right now in Chicago. We're expecting some mix of clouds and sun during the morning. Eventually, it will give way to cloudy skies in the afternoon. Overcast skies with a few showers expecting later at night. The highest of the day is 40 and the lowest 34. 55 degrees in Phoenix, sunny day, partially cloudy. The high of the day is 64 and the lowest 36. No traffic reported at this point, only one accident on Montrose Avenue and Cicero. No details. There are some delays, maybe about 17 to 21 miles per hour. And other than that, looks pretty clear to me. Maybe somehow it relates to the fan fact that about 17.2 million of employees are expected to call off this morning after the Super Bowl. It's pretty big number.
Oh, yes?
Mm-hmm.
One day it's a CBOE. I think the quote reporters, the people, if you call in sick, you got fired.
And, of course, long-expected sports report. Kansas City is our Super Bowl champion, Patrick Mahomes, right?
Yep.
Leads epic rally as Chiefs beat 31-20 San Francisco.
All right, so give us the skinny here, and you and Tatiana are sitting watching this game. Are we glancing at it once in a while we're talking about guys? What are we doing? Are we studying every play?
Yeah, we know a little bit of everything. We are multitasking people.
Were you scouring the commercials?
No, actually no. Not at all.
I thought there was a lot of commercials. I couldn't even tell what the product
didn't catch
was.
My eye.
Plus the beer commercial, I even never heard of the place. Great Artesian or Great Arch, or what was the name of the place? The beer commercial, I didn't even know where the hell they were.
The only thing I didn't understand, who was that lady in the red in the end?
In the commercial or?
No, like in the end of Super Bowl when there was...
Was it one of the two girls, two ladies that played at halftime?
No, it was like an elderly woman.
Oh, I don't know. We left with about a minute to go.
Oh, when they presented, like the...
Oh, she had to be one of the owners of Kansas City. Might have been...
Hunt.
She, what's his name's daughter, Frank?
H.L.H. Hunt?
Yeah.
Or no, Bunker Hunt. Who owned it?
Not the Hunts, did Jan? Who owned the pool in the... Kansas City.
So what, other teams, are they like private teams?
Oh, yeah, they're all owned by...
It's not like a national or something, I don't know, state?
That's U.S. royalty, people that own these teams.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, it's a closed group of people.
Very closed group, and you got to have lots of money. So
Lamar Hunt.
And it must be the daughter. Just like if the Bears ever won and... What's her name? Still alive? They'd give it to her because she's Papa Bear's daughter, even though she's 90-something years old. Well, but that's nothing wrong with that. We hope we get there. It's in pretty good shape too. Anyway, Frank, give us a quick prediction, and then we'll let you go, bud. What do you think?
I think we're going to wallow here until we get something a bit more definite. I think we're more likely to take another leg down than. Go up, but I've been wrong every single time for about 3 years. So,
well, I miss
pick a bottom and you're a genius.
Well, I think there'll probably be some attempt to rally here a little bit, but I mean, the thing is still growing. How many last week we had 5,000 cases, today we got 17, so that's not a good week.
No, so stay home, hoard food and wait and see what happens. That's what I think.
We don't usually give stock advice, and we don't really want to give medical advice. But I will say this, just saying, and you guys can argue or if you go buy the masks at Home Depot, I'm going to say those are designed for plasterboard dust. They're not designed for viruses. Just saying.
And they're far more. Efficient in preventing you from infecting other people than preventing being infected.
Well, that's true too. Now, if you pull it down and you smoke, does the cigarette smoke protect you?
Only if you're on oxygen.
Oh God! All right, Frank. Thank you very much, buddy. Talk to you.
Okay, bye.
I'll talk to you before then, but we'll talk next week. Jan, how are you?
Good, Tom. And you?
All right. Did you studiously watch all the commercials so you give us a complete report?
I dozed off a couple times. I was poking around on other stuff too, and I'd come back to it occasionally. But it's kind of a blur after a while. I don't know the products well enough, or am interested in comparing them or anything to really pay much attention. And as you say, it's hard to figure out sometimes what the product is, and that's part of the shtick in these ads to keep people guessing and keep them watching. So, but it's, I must say a lot of it is lost on me these days. I don't get the same thrill I used to out of watching them.
Well, the one of the commercials was some beer company I never heard of.
I know.
Well, just...
Yeah, I don't know where I would go to find it or if I'd be, you know, care enough to go and look for it. So it's supposed to tweak your curiosity and get people talking about it. So I guess ads are still working the way they always did. But they're becoming more and more esoteric and kind of out there. And I just think it shows that they're really trying whatever they can to stir up commentary. And it's, you know, marketing has sort of taken off in a direction I can't quite follow it because it doesn't get me that interested in, you know, what they're after. And I'm not in that demographic anyway, I don't think. But,
well, John, I'm not a, I've had some experience in marketing. Obviously, you know, in this day and age, I wish I was better at internet marketing and stuff. I mean, I have a few more clients. I don't want them anymore because I got quite a few. but somebody could still come in if they wanted to. But the idea, it's always a confusion sort of thing. I was chairman of the marketing committee of the SIBO for 4 years. Was it five? Somewhere. It was a bunch. And you, one of the things that's always very confusing, really for anybody, is it PR or is it marketing? Because there's a big difference.
Right.
In a sense that depends, like take a company like PTI. When we were bringing in a lot of clients when, you know, we were younger, Jan and I would do the show, okay, and then people would call and then we would have a seminar. And we would lecture about our strategies and obviously prove to people, A, we had an office, we had a real firm, and oh, by the way, you know, we knew what we were talking about. And we had, four or five people here that could all ask questions on any topic, and it was pretty obvious that it was a very special firm in the sense that everybody here had 15 years trading experience on the floor, and you're not going to find a place like that, you know, on average. Yet a Merrill Lynch probably could just run an ad and get some people from there. And what we learned when I was in the marketing, the SIBO used to send out all these mailers. And if you get a 1% return on your mailer, now that's direct marketing, right? You're sending stuff to people. They'd get a 1% return on the mailers. And then when they did radio, they didn't get anything. I mean, for a seminar, sign up and things like that. Because people in the car are not going to sit down. You're not capable. When I say not capable, you don't have a pen and paper at the ready to write down the phone number and all that kind of stuff. But when the group that I was there, one of the people was a little smarter, and when I heard it, I said, let's try it. We did radio at the same time we sent out the mailers. All of a sudden, we got the incredible return on the mailers of like 4.5%, 5%, which is way off the chart. Way off the chart. I mean, if you get 1% return, it's a damn good mailer. And we were getting 0.1% before. All of a sudden, we quadrupled that because it was the second touch. Oh, yeah, I heard these guys on the radio. They sounded good. And, oh, by the way, all I got to do is, and one of the ladies who was very bright, knew her marketing really well, said you can't send something where people, inside of the thing was something you would just tear off, either put the postcard right back in the mail without having to throw anything else out, or you would, you know, it was already stamped where if you mail it, the other side pays kind of thing, or you would take it right over to the phone with the number on it. So something in the, so all those little things really made a difference. What I'm getting to, long story short, too late. Pepsi, for instance, always viewed Super Bowl ads as marketing. They used to be, well, they had a couple of ads yesterday, but they used to be heavy into this. But they, Jan, would chart the Pepsi sales vis-a-vis Coke and other people. You know, nothing's changed, but I'm going back 15, 20 years when I first started to read all this stuff. They could actually chart if the ads were really good, and they paid Michael Jackson, they paid all these people, remember? And if the ads were really good, they would get a bulge in business that lasted about the first week, then it would drop off a little second week, third week, fourth week. The bulge in business exceeded the amount they paid on the Super Bowl. So that's direct marketing. Now, the other type of thing is, because you can go out and buy a Pepsi tomorrow anywhere. You don't even really have to look, right? Matter of fact, you'd probably go in your fridge in the office and grab a Pepsi instead of a Coke, because they're both sitting right there. So in other words, a decision you can make instantly. But now if you do GoDaddy, right? They had the great commercials with the shall we say, the very well-endowed young ladies with the equipment malfunctions and all this stuff. Remember those things? Well, but GoDaddy is a internet firm that you know, we use GoDaddy for housing Stocks and Jacks and our email stuff. Sure. Well, you're not going to, on a Monday morning, just because you liked the books, buxom young lady in the commercial, you're not going to go out and form a company to where you need an email address just so you can use GoDaddy, right?
Yeah, there's a real difference between stimulating an appetite where you can right away see an increase in consumption because of that appeal versus just raising people's awareness or creating name recognition that may down the road, you know, parlay itself into an increase in appetite. But you're right. I mean, a lot of the advertising is to raise, you know, awareness or to plant a name or an image, and it's bankable, you know, down the road somewhere, but it doesn't, I don't think, result in any kind of observable increase in appetite for those services or goods or whatever. So part of it is, you know, if the exposure is so great that, you know, people will glomp onto it for whatever reason, just to get their name out of a beer nobody ever heard of before and wouldn't know where to find if they had an appetite for it. But if that's all mingled with the, you know, the old-fashioned products that you get an immediate bang right away, like with Pepsi or something else. So it's blurred, and PR and marketing are, you know, sort of flip sides of the same thing, and PR is maybe in the ascendancy right now. So.
But maybe in the states of New York and California, that particular beer is this week is making a big splash in every supermarket and liquor store. They have a big, what do you call those things? They're not just on the shelf. There's a big thing in the aisle or stacked up at the end.
Displays, yeah.
You know, maybe they're doing that as well. So on Monday, this morning, if you and I are looking to buy some beer at 7 o'clock on a Monday morning, which I hope we aren't, walk in and say, "Hey, that's the stuff that was on the Super Bowl. I'll give it a shot."
Less than 12 hours ago.
Yeah, but I never heard of these guys. I'll give them a shot because I like the commercial. You know, that could happen because then it's the second touch. You know what I found interesting is as I was wandering through the Myers yesterday morning at 6 o'clock, like I always do, I walked down the liquor aisle. Now, you can't buy anything at that hour, but I just doing research. You always got to do research, John. Usually, the liquor aisle at the Myers is a mass of yellow tags. You know, this wine's $15 a bottle. Well, today it's $14. Everything in the world's on sale, right? I mean, every other bottle or this $65 of bourbon is, you know, $59.99 today. Not one yesterday. Not one thing. You know, the liquor or beer aisle was on sale before the Super Bowl.
They got their audience all ready.
Yeah, they got
they're not looking for sale shoppers.
They're figuring
people buy it at whatever price.
If a guy all of a sudden has a bunch of people coming over to his house and he heads out there, last thing you want to do is greet him with a sale because he's buying no matter what.
I bet the yellow tags are back up today.
I bet they were up as soon as the game started. If you're on halftime, you might have got them. I don't know, but I sit there and go, wait a minute, this aisle looks weird. I go, there's not a thing on sale out of a bazillion products they have there. But you wonder, what do you suppose the Big Daddy, now that, you know, if you're a guy, plus you went to the, remember what they used to do is they'd say, they'd have the commercials, go to our website and see the commercials that they wouldn't accept.
Right.
So everybody would run there, of course, and find something way racier than was actually on the TV. You know, every guy would anyway. And probably the ladies would just to see what the guys are looking, who the hell knows. But I wonder, what's the half-life on that, John? If all of a sudden I have a company and I just started one, and it's next week, and there's three possible places I could house my internet name, I'll probably pick the GoDaddy just because I heard the name and maybe saw the commercial, and I figured at least they're trying to get my attention. How much has that fallen? 6 months? A year? 2 years? Is the half life? How fast do you think that degrades?
Well, I think it's degrading all the time, and it's being replaced by, you know, because it's a do-it-yourself kind of, you know, web platform. That's its appeal, and you don't have to pay an arm and a leg to somebody to do a couple drafts of it. You can put it together yourself if you have the time and some expertise. And those people, you know, move on or do something better if they see this isn't working, and other people come in and try it. So I think it's kind of a revolving door, probably, but... It doesn't really translate to big growth, I wouldn't think. I mean, I think that probably the growth is, you know, up and down more than anything else, just because of its appeal. It's not, there's not much science behind it. It's, you know, somebody putting together a website without much expertise necessarily, and you don't need it for something like GoDaddy, which is good. But if you don't reach the audience you're trying to, or you feel like you wasted your energy, you'll go back and do something else. And it doesn't have any kind of lasting power, I don't think. If you really are a serious marketer, you'll do it more professionally than that. Probably.
The guys who got the stadium naming rights was the Hard Rock, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, those guys that are the Hard Rock, obviously in the stadium. There's one up in Toronto, too, I believe. But anyway, those guys spent $10 million on ads. I don't know, John. How can you figure out whether that's worth it to you or not?
Yeah, I don't know how you measure that. And I think at some level they probably don't worry about whether they've got, you know, confirming numbers for how they
spend. Well, I mean, you do if you're some egotistical bleep and you just want your name out there. But if you ever have to answer to a board... We spent $10 million. Why do we spend ten? Why not five? Why not 15? What is it? Just ego that's driving? I mean, or is there a reason for it? I mean, when I say this, I'm not finding fault, but I'm saying as the president of the CBOE told me when I was, Chuck Henry was a terrific man. I really liked him and a real smart guy, and he said to me, you know, Tom, when you go to Wrigley Field and you see all these Coca-Cola signs or old style signs or whatever, you know, if you're the Coke guy or the old style guy, you want to have enough of these signs around. But Solomon couldn't tell you when you got 400 signs in there and you put the 401st up, how much that 401st sign is worth it to you.
Well, to put this in another forum, I don't watch that much TV anymore, but I've already seen enough Mike Bloomberg TV commercials to last me a lifetime. And I don't know what that's translating to other than it's getting, you know, his face on television in enough places where it's going to translate to something down the road. I don't know what, but it isn't that it's building any kind of consensus for Mike Bloomberg that I'm aware of. Maybe it was never designed to anyway. It was just to create a stir of some kind. But
just an aside, the ladies at Dr. J's yesterday were sitting there in a terrific group. And John always gets a great group. But he does a nice job with his chili, although I will say it's way too spicy for most people. I love it, John. But
bring it on.
but anyway, but the three of the women sitting there, including his wife, the judge Bridget McGrath, say, hey, Tommy, when are the Bloomberg and Trump commercials? I'm just sitting here waiting for the Bloomberg and Trump commercials. I go, Bridge, you missed them. What do you mean I missed them? I'm sitting there. I said they were so unremarkable. They went right by. They were both. They didn't. I mean, I said they were. I used the term unremarkable. Instead, they sucked. I was being nice. I said they were unremarkable. She goes, you mean I watched them and I didn't even know? I said they were both like that bad.
They're long commercials, and they really do just create kind of a blur or a snooze factor.
Yeah.
Where they're in the background, I'm not listening to them. I know they're on, and I turn the sound off until they're over. But you got to wonder what kind of strategy is at work here, and I think it's probably pushing towards a brokered convention of some kind to get some sort of stir where people think that Bloomberg really is a serious player, and maybe he thinks he is.
But well, I actually really like the guy. I think he did a great job in New York. Well. A good job. I mean, I don't know if he never does a great job or whatever, but because I never lived in New York. But remember when Blair Hall ran for governor here?
Oh, yeah.
Well, Dr. J and I were at breakfast, and he goes, he's going to be our next governor. And I said, John, I'll bet you breakfast he's not. And he goes, why? He's got more money than he was running. Senator he was running for. He was running for senator.
He was running against Obama.
Well, he had more money than Obama early on, right?
Yeah.
And I go, he goes, why do you say he's not going to be? He's got all this money, blah, blah, blah. He's smart. I said, John, he just walked out of the Ceres Cafe. Everybody in here is a traitor. Everybody here knows the guy. He didn't wave or say hello to one guy at one table. Didn't, I mean, you and I walk out of here, there's going to be five people saying hello to us. which, you know, is understatement. More people, a lot of everybody knows Janice, some people know me, because we like to talk to people, and we're nice to everybody. I mean, I'm not saying Blair Hull isn't a good guy. He is, but the personality, somewhere along the line here, Mike Bloomberg.
Your worst failing is just to walk past people.
Yeah, I get the feeling I actually would love it if the guy got nominated, because I think he's probably the most experienced, nicest one in the group. But what my point is, Jan, I'm sitting there, and I like the guy, and I'm going, he can't just buy me by head. Someday he's got to talk to me. Or he's got to get on a talk show where people get to ask him questions. All he's trying to do is buy the... I mean, I'm sitting there right now, it is turning me off big time, and I like the guy. I want to see him. I mean, I'd love to have him on the show, obviously, but that ain't going to happen. But my point is, I want to see him mixing it up with the other people. I want him to see him talking to people. It's the beauty of our system here is as much as it may stink, is before somebody becomes president, you got to sit in 90 bazillion diners in Iowa and New Hampshire with blue-haired ladies bitching at you, basically, because I don't think they're holding back. The system almost forces you to go out and meet a million Americans, right? I mean, that's somewhat the beauty of it. And he's trying to discount all that. I don't think he can do that.
I don't think so either.
And I think people will feel that. I mean, that's cool. He wants to be my president, but he doesn't want to talk to me. You know, am I totally wrong with this or not?
But no, you could look at a Trump rally versus a rally for practically any other candidate in 2016 or now, and say what you will about Trump. These people come in huge numbers to feel a personal connection, and he gives it to them. He doesn't have to shake all their hands.
All right.
But he can pull them in and excite them and say, you know, all the right punchlines for people, and they respond and they come out invigorated by it. And I have to give any politician who can do that some credit.
Which sure does look like an NRA rally, though, doesn't it? Some of his stuff.
Well, and that's, you know, that's part of his shtick too. That he knows those people are sort of shunned by.
By the way,
political industry. So
we come back for break. I got to tell you about one of the guys at the Seaboard actually went to one of those things. S&P futures now up 16.50, Nasdaq up 51, trying to bounce back. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
Hi, this is John Neal from PTI Securities and Futures and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, as well as the branch manager of our Peoria, Arizona location. I hope you, like many of our listeners, have benefited from the outstanding market returns of the last several years. But have you recently become unsettled due to the worldwide geopolitical uncertainty, the increased volatility of commodities and currencies, or the looming Federal Reserve interest rate hikes? If you have answered yes to any of these questions, we can help you. Here at PTI, we offer a unique variety of income-producing securities as well as our proprietary hedging program to protect your assets. More information about these exciting programs and much more can be obtained from our website at PTIsecurities.com, or feel free to email me at john@PTIsecurities.com. That's john@PTIsecurities.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed-income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we have always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTIsecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTIsecurities.com.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is now available to you. We are offering three of our research newsletter: the Daily World News Report,
our daily stock and futures trading recommendations, and our twice weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks, including potential shorts. Each of these reports are available via email before the market opens. Go to our website, www.dacsresearch.net, to obtain the tool that meets your trading and investment needs. Or call me and get 2 weeks free with a one-month subscription. 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures trading have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to factor in the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other life decision. Your brain is smarter than your gut, and that's why you owe it to yourself to read Luckbox. We've made it easy because Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with timely, actionable trading ideas, and equips you with savvy investing tactics you don't already know, all while exploring how to live your best life through music, spirits, food, sports, travel, fitness, and a whole lot more. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on controlling their financial futures. It's for overachievers and alpha types who don't buy into Wall Street's investment gurus. It's for mavericks who believe in life, luxury, and the pursuit of happiness. It's for you! Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck, get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now. Can't buy me love.
Loan up back, Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howell. She's AV on the board. We have Mr. John Flanagan with us. S&P Futures up 16. NASDAQ Futures up 52. Dow up 97. We're trying to bounce back here. Again, the big number is the Shanghai was down 7.7%. The government stood ready over there with a bunch of money to pile in if needed. They claim it was for liquidity issues and not to prop up the stock market. If you believe that, I got a bridge for you for sale. But it did hit on a day when the Chinese market has been, their margin interest was kind of at an all-time high, so it's not really the best day for that to happen. But I think some people thought it would be more than 10%, it would be bumping up against limits and so forth. Let's say this is better than I thought. It's not surprising to me that we're trying to bounce back some from Friday's horrible day. So, Jan, I was just thinking during the break that one of the guys on the trading floor talk about groups of people. Let's say, what is the politically correct, my wordsmith fellow, what is the politically correct term these days for somebody who's not quite all there but is functional?
Oh, not limited. I'm certainly not challenged anymore.
Challenged or something? I don't even know what
challenge. Yeah, challenge. That works.
So a guy who's short is what, vertically challenged?
Vertically challenged, yeah.
And a guy who's fat is spatially challenged?
Horizontally challenged, or...
And if you're ever bald, you're follically challenged. Anyway, so anyway, we had this guy. He used to work behind the book in the OEX pit. So you'd do that down there, and you'd make a trade with the book, and then you'd get the names later. Well, this guy knew everybody, and it was the only job he could have. He walks up, and he knew everybody. He had almost a photographic memory of names, because a lot of times people that are, quote, challenged have some skills that other people don't have. And anyway... So, of course, everybody knows me, and he'd always stop and he'd BS with me. And well, it turns out he was going to go to. I could see you and Lou and Kevin going to this convention, and you know where I'm talking. It's not an NRA. Think even worse.
Oh,
he went to a convention in Vegas, Soldier of Fortune. And I go, you're doing what? Just to show you, remember the transient hotel on LaSalle Street that burned down about 20 years ago?
Oh, yeah.
Well, he lived there.
SRO, yeah.
Mm-hmm. He lived there. So next morning he comes in like a pair of orange pants, and everybody figured out this guy lived there. So, of course, the OEX is the people on the trading floor are the most generous people. Somebody gets a bag, and everybody throws like 10 bucks in the bag, and they give the guy like $2,000 to go buy more stuff, right? I mean, nobody even batted an eye doing stuff like that. And, So he comes back with pictures for this thing. Jan, the three of you guys would have a great time. That's all I'll say. Frank and I will, you know, we'll go over and gamble on the sports or something. All these booths selling all this incredible stuff. And he's got pictures of him with these spectacular looking women, both at the show and out at the pool. The women came at this place like there was no tomorrow. And he's got a picture with Jay Gordon Liddy, just with him. And the guy's about 5'1", and the women are 5'10", and Jay Gordon Liddy's a pretty big guy. How did you get a picture with Jay Gordon Liddy? Oh, he loved me. I'm going, jeez. So get a load of this. These guys decide, and they're selling stuff like mortars and stuff that I didn't think you could sell. I mean, so somebody decides that they're going to go buy this old junker car, and they drive it out to the desert. Now, they let the Vegas Fire Department know about it. So they come out anxious to be able to practice. They put this car out in the desert. They go behind these rocks, and all these guys that just bought machine guns and mortars start launching all this crap at the car as a target. So they finally blow the thing up, and then the Vegas Fire Department gets to come in and put the fire out in practice. I'm thinking, you got to be kidding me.
That will turn up in some Hollywood blockbuster film someday.
Oh, I know. I mean, it's got to be on YouTube somewhere. I was just thinking that I could see you and Kevin and Lou out there all, you know, hanging around the mortar guy or something, you know. Yeah, everybody needs a machine gun and a mortar. I mean, how long is it? Where do you go for mortar lessons? Just out of curiosity.
I don't know. I'm still in search of my peer group here. I mean,
you and Kevin and Lou. No, there's two lawyers in there. Is there something to be said for there? Was something. I mean, Kevin is the only one who's, you know, I don't know. A lot to be said. So, man, what do you, as a guy who's not necessarily a trader, but obviously an observer, what do you make of kind of, I mean, how would you, if you had a big portfolio, not saying you don't, how would you handicap in terms of the China situation for you? I mean, how do you really know, like we were talking about earlier, whether, you know, China Airlines is 1 week away from going under, like United was here in 9/11. I mean, how would you know that we're, you know, there's going to be a 20% default on, you know, euro and dollar denominated bonds coming out of China? How would any of us know that? I mean, that's a job kind of the Fed, and it looks to me like when it comes to this kind of stuff, they've always been clueless on the next problem. I mean, how would we find out? How can we do about it?
With an information producing entity, you know, with China, that, you know, historically we haven't had to factor in when it came to, you know, economic disruptions. How much of the Chinese news is trustworthy? How much of it isn't, you know, processed or handicapped already within an inch of its life before we see it here? And that makes it impossible, really, to say where any of this is headed. Overall, it looks like, you know, the number of cases that are, you know, being reported versus the mortality rate isn't as frightening as people feared. But that's based on, you know, numbers that, you know, the trackability of these numbers is based on what China is letting out, where the bulk of the cases are. And I don't know if you can really trust those numbers. I don't know if you know, when it comes to that kind of stuff, and there's so much riding on it internally in China, where their economy was already in trouble, can you really handicap it at all? Are you just, you know, can you flip a coin and be better off? I suspect it's not, you know, any more trustworthy than that. So it's unfortunate, but when you have a player like that on the world stage and they're that secretive and, you know, duplicitous in their trading practices and information producing entities, all bets are off, I think. What's your take on that?
Well, I was sending you stuff. I have been sort of on this all weekend. The most encouraging thing to me, John, is that we do have, what do we have, 5 or 8 cases here, and so far everybody's been treatable.
There's 11 in the U.S. or something I saw. There's,
okay, I thought it was 8.
That's pretty complete.
Probably more today.
The distribution, it's got like a intensity map of China showing where the bulk of the reported cases are and the mortality, and it's updated constantly. So that's it's reassuring to see something in this country that is at least tracking numbers that it's being given. And the numbers don't look as frightening as they did a week ago, I'd say.
Well, if you had 11 cases here, and 3 days later, 7 of them were dead. Now, that's a different story.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
And so far, that's, but the thing that chills me is I, what possessed me to do this, Jan? I went back and read buku articles on the 1918 thing. That thing came through once. It wasn't deadly, and it came back again mutated, and it was seriously deadly. It, the, I guess the nervousness here from the, if we, a couple of ladies that I've talked to in the years go by, from my buddy Dr. Billy, his girlfriends, the, one of the ladies was the, what do you call somebody who goes after germs? She'd be, she was in the Chicago office, essentially the Center for Disease Control in Atlanta. I think they were based at Northwestern. I think so. I'm not positive. Either there or Rush. And, I'm gonna say that they're, that group is concerned that since this thing mutated once, who's to stop it from mutating again? I mean, it's, I mean, it, my concern is that this, what we're seeing now might be unstable. It might actually be different a month from now.
Well, there's, I think there was about a 6 month gap in 1918 when the disease first appeared,
right,
in, say, March, April of 1918, and quickly subsided. And then it, in October, September, October, November, up through the armistice, it reignited vociferously, violently, and that's where most of the mortality occurred. So people were, and, you know, one of the hard things today is to imagine what people were thinking back then, but if you go back and look in the newspapers around, you know, November 1918 in Chicago, there's all this war news, you know, the armistice is approaching, people knew the war was winding down, and a lot of the, you know, the papers are devoted to that. But then you go to the obituary pages, and there's like 10, 12 pages of obituaries in Chicago, and people, you know, I'm sure thought, gee, there's a lot of obituaries today in the Tribune or the Examiner, but it didn't translate to panic. And then the police started appearing with face masks downtown directing traffic, and there were health alerts and, you know, washing your hands and all this stuff, and people started to get freaked out by it. And Chicago got it bad, but not as bad as some other cities. And as soon as it peaked, you know, then it went away. And that's another, you know, kind of strange thing about the whole pandemic, that it vanished and it was quickly forgotten, really. I mean, unless people were survivors of it and had stories to tell, people really didn't talk about it. My parents,
but it killed how many million people?
Oh, my God. Yeah. It's just... There's one, you know, I'll just put in a shout-out for one piece of fiction called Pale Horse, Pale Rider by the American author Catherine Ann Porter, who lived through the epidemic, and she was working as a newspaper, you know, worker in Denver at the time, and, you know, had her obituary written up while she was in a coma, was out for several days, maybe several weeks, I think, and, you know, woke up, all her hair had fallen out, the whole world had changed, and this short story, it's actually kind of a long short story, is about a woman who has this happen to her, and in the meantime, her fiancé has been killed, and all these statistics are being reported in the newspaper, and she's just like, what the heck's going on? I don't remember any of this happening. And it's one of the most chilling, creepy pieces of fiction I know of that even talks about the 1918 flu epidemic. And the reality, of course, was, you know, multiplied by millions and millions of people. So it behooves us to think about these things and, you know, and not forget about them, because we don't have any better equipment in some ways to deal with them than we did then. And they can get a foothold and come back and blindside you before you're aware of it, and, you know, all hell could break loose. So,
well, the weird part of it, Jan, is that I, you know, again, you think you know stuff, and if ever you think you know stuff, try and be a radio / podcast host for a while with people writing stuff at you, because you find out instantly that you know about a tenth of what you would like to know, and maybe a hundredth of what you should know. I mean, it's, I didn't really realize that one of the when you hear people hacking away with a flu or cough or whatever, what it really tells you is that it's an upper respiratory type of thing, and the germs are infecting your sinuses and your throat and all the other crap that goes around up there. I'm not an anatomist. But that your lungs are, you're trying to get rid of it, and your lungs are actually healthy, and that's why you're trying to cough the stuff up more than when you've done radio. But this thing, when it came through the second time, it not only affected your upper respiratory, but your lower respiratory, it actually affected the lungs. So you couldn't cough the stuff up. Which I can't, it was gotta be brutal. It's almost like, you know, dying in your own vomit, for God's sake. Not that, you know, I mean, you, all of a sudden now you, nothing works. And it affected people the younger you were. That's why the army camps got annihilated, because that's where all the healthy people, well, I mean, the people that are 20 years old you think are the healthiest around, they got obliterated more than any place else.
I mean, and there are horrific stories of people, even in Chicago, you know, getting on the streetcar to go to work. They took sick during the streetcar ride, and by the end of the line, they were discovered dead in their seat. You know, they were well enough to get on the streetcar at the beginning of the route, but they didn't make it to the end, and that's how quickly you could go downhill with this. So,
you know how much better off we'd be if we had streetcars again?
Oh, God, I miss them, Tom. I really miss them.
The funny, but so when you say all this stuff, I had people yesterday ask me at Dr. Day's party, what do you think of all this? And I'm like, I would love to know. I mean, now everybody says, I'll just think of things outside the box. That's what I'm once in a while, I mean, that's what I try and do to listeners. And, we all learn together. Okay, so we're not having any airline flights to China. So what does that mean to you, Jen?
Well, it doesn't interrupt my life at all, but boy, what it means to businesses, what it means to educational institutions, what it means to, you know, tourism is pretty incalculable.
Okay, so my point is, you're immediately thinking of the part of the plane that your fanny's in, right?
Yep.
Meaning the passenger section. Correct?
Yeah.
Right, well, what's below you?
Cargo.
All your just-in-time cargo. If all of a sudden you get parts from China and you need a couple of more and you can't wait 8 days for it to ship the lumber across the Pacific, however long it takes, it's on that plane, right? But now that plane's not coming. Now what? I mean, how much, I'm not, when it comes to, I don't, I mean, other than, you know, Disney, you know, Hong Kong or whatever the hell it is, I don't, you know, I'm not as concerned where my companies here, if I own stocks and companies or my clients do. It's one thing for somebody not to go over and visit the officers of the company. You know, that's fine. That's why you have telephones and Skype for, right? I mean, it's not like you can't talk to these people. You can. But now the question is, if it's John and Chief at AV Widget Company and one of our machines that we need for sure blows a left tire or whatever the part is, and it's a machine that China makes the parts for, the control systems are probably here, but the part for that we normally can get tomorrow,
it's going to sit there busted.
It's going to sit there busted for what? How long? Now, I have not heard when they say they're not flying people in and out. Does that mean cargo flights are benched too, and that you can't even send a pilot and a co-pilot in, load it up and bring it out? I have not heard that. But I'm going to say after 2 or 3 weeks, that is more dangerous to our economy than the fannies upstairs.
Oh, I agree with you, Tom. And, you know, this has never really factored into the globalist mantra.
No.
That at its foundation, it's a very fragile system. And all it takes is panic over, you know, a health event like this, and everything will grind to a halt until it can be isolated or controlled or understood. And in the meantime, what happens to an economy that's become dependent on free association of goods and people? It goes into the tank. So the system is only as resilient as, you know, it can function in times of crisis. And apparently, you know, in a crisis like this, it's not going to function any better than it ever did. And the effect is going to be more felt more deeply because everything happens so fast now with air travel and air transport, and when that stops, you know, right away the domino effect is increased in speed too. So we're in somewhat uncharted territories, and it's always been a fear if something like this became uncontrolled and fear took over, that when things shut down, everybody will pay a price. So,
well, John, it's like, who is the And as bizarre as it may seem, the show does have a theme. Who was the Asian guy who, back in the day, that says no man can do just one thing? Something along those lines. Whatever you do has repercussions. And that's what, in the world, the tweet world we live in, one of the things I'm constantly fighting against with people I talk with on the show here or whatever, No, everything has repercussions. Everything you do. Yes, there's five things that happen, or ten, not one. And when I was one of my first jobs was at, remember Hi-Lo Foods?
Oh, yeah. Very well.
Hi-Lo Foods, the store was, I'm going to say, was it even a tenth the size of a normal Meijer's or Walmart food thing? But the trucks would come and back, and they'd say, all right, there's a truck back there. We've got to go unload the truck. All the stock boys would go back, and we'd unload the truck, and maybe if you really knew something was empty out in the store, you'd haul that dolly out to the pop aisle or whatever. But by and large, there was a big room in the back for storage, and you unloaded all this crap, and you put it back there, you know, organized. And then as you needed a case of canned corn or whatever, you went back and you'd stock that out. You'd go through and you'd inventory what you needed, and it was a case of beans, a case of this, a case of... And then you go back and you'd pick them off the back, and then you... So everything was handled essentially twice, right?
Yeah.
Now, as time goes by, you say, now, wait a minute, why do we need to do that? Why don't we just have the truck show up? If the store's big enough, we know the truck is going to show up in time, we can tell from the correct cash register what we need where, and we're just going to take the stuff right out in the aisle. The last thing we're ever going to do, only if we ordered 10 cases and the idiot sent us 20, our back room is going to be 1/100th the size of the store, right? Because what good is that real estate doing for us? Nothing, right?
Right, right.
So the beauty of it is we handle everything once. It's way more profitable. You don't need a bunch of idiot stock boys like me running around. I get all that. But now all of a sudden, if there's problems in the supply chain or the truck can't make it, now what? I mean, what looked like this massive Walmart or Meijer's in 4 days is empty. Right?
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, that's the flip side. Now, I don't want to go back to the other, but it wouldn't surprise me that if all of a sudden there's no cargo flights out of China, that, you know, you're not going to send the whole printing press or the whole press in a plane, but you're going to send the parts in the plane, I think.
Sure.
So, I mean, how much of this... I'm struggling because I know I'm going to start getting calls this morning. What stocks are going to be most affected? What aren't? You know what, Jen? I don't know. I have a feeling that if all of a sudden you really shut down China, that Tim Cook, you know, him and the president loving each other is not going to help that. All of a sudden, Apple's got a problem. They sold 17% of their phones there, and oh, by the way, most of their manufacturing there and a lot of their stores are there. They got a problem. Now, if China's shut down for 6 months, is Apple worth $310? No. Now, whether it's worth $305 or $205, that's for the market to decide, not me, right? But I would say that this was not something that anybody saw coming. So it's a shot across the bow, right? It's not like, you know, it's Christmas, like Carl likes to say every year. There's a Christmas every year. So if you compare last year's Christmas sales with this year, it's not like there's nothing seasonal there. There's a Christmas every year, right?
Right.
So the question, I mean, I have to believe that our transportation companies, I know that these trips to Asia, from what my friends John Lee, who's been a contributor to the show a few times, you met John, right?
Yeah.
John flies back and forth to Asia, various parts over there, you know, 5, 6, 10 times a year. And he would say that you get a guy like Dr. J who flies to New York, you know, at least once a week, maybe back and forth a couple times. I mean, he shows up at the same flight on a Monday morning, and, you know, and the lady or the guy at the thing go, hey, there's room up front. Go sit up in first class. They don't even charge him for his miles. I mean, because he's got so many bazillion miles, they give him a free upgrade. John Lee says that they don't care if you're Marco Polo. If you want to go from coach to business class from here to Tokyo, you're giving them a boatload of miles, or you're paying up. Because those things, that's the cash cow of these airlines now. Asia. Not even Europe, but Asia. So if they stop 300 flights to China, profitability-wise for United Airlines, I'm guessing that's 1,000 flights here, maybe more, John. But I don't know. I mean, it's hard for me to quantify. Now, is United...
Yeah, how do you measure the resonating effect of that all the way down the line, all over the world? It defies, you know, your imagination can't kind of assemble it all.
Well, does that mean United's going to go under like it did last time? I don't think so. I think they're in a lot better shape than they were in a Y2K, or I mean the 9/11. I mean, I think they got way more on the balance sheet than 2 weeks this time or 4 weeks or whatever it was. I mean, I don't think it's even close. But how much? I mean, I've yet to see anybody come out and say United Airlines makes $2 billion a year, and oh, by the way, half a billion of it's going back and forth to China. I mean, yeah. you out of all the information you get, there's less and less people providing information. And this, every answer that I'm looking for this morning, before I talk to my people or whoever else I talk to during the day, I'm not so sure I can get. I mean, where's the analyst? So there should be somebody this morning saying, you know, these three airlines cancel all this crap to China. This is what it's going to mean to United Airlines per week. I mean, where have you seen that? I haven't.
No, and I hope somebody somewhere is doing this kind of number crunching,
right,
if only for their own particular corner of the market. But there is no, I mean, the whole thing is being tested in a situation like this, and this kind of phenomenon doesn't happen often enough for us to have very good data on response to it or long-term effects from it. So it's instructive to watch and to measure it and to be prepared for shocks and disturbances that were unforeseen, even in given what we know about past events like this, whether 9/11 or other cataclysms like that. And we're in kind of uncharted territory, I think, with this disease. It's not understood well enough at all to predict. All you can do is monitor and kind of look around you and see how it's being responded to in the public eye and in the news media and everything else, and hope that it is, cooler heads prevail. I don't think it's as bad as it's been predicted to be, but I don't know how bad it will be. So I can't, say for sure what the long-term effects would be of something that up in the air. So it's very, very difficult. And I do think that we're kind of, being tested. So let's respond intelligently. But there's no need for panic yet. So
I would agree. I hope the information continues to... I mean, there was a time, John, where my University of Chicago roots would say you don't even have to read the news, just look at the market. I don't think the market's getting that kind of information anymore. I don't trust the market anywhere near as much as I did when I was younger, because I've seen, stocks traded 50 and the next day go out of business, where you never would have predicted that coming out of the University of Chicago school, shall I say. Anyway, Jan, thank you very much. I think we might need you later in the week if this stuff keeps going. So
always available, Tom.
All right, buddy. Take care of yourself. S&P futures are up 21 and a quarter now, the highs that we've seen. So we're bouncing there pretty good. NASDAQ futures up 66. Be right back, Mr. David Andelman. Maybe he can tell us how to trade this stuff.
Did you know there are fewer professional traders than there are professional athletes? Given the tough demands and rapidly changing market environment, where the only constant is change, Fari Hamzi, founder and president of Hamzi Analytics, is truly a professional trader. Having a top 10 ranking as an astute market timer on Timer Digest for the past decade, to go along with 20 years of trading experience, Fari is using his expertise to provide a platform where technology meets experience, and Fari's tools are battle-tested in the most volatile market conditions. His proprietary indicators are embedded in TradeStation and eSignal trading platforms, measuring the money flow of large institutions while providing an in-depth analysis of what is taking place in the market and what it means going forward. Remember, smart traders never look at the price of an investment, but rather the cost of a missed opportunity. Visit HamziAnalytics.com to learn more. That's HamziAnalytics, H-A-M-Z-E-I, analytics.com. Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, Nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
This is John Neal from PTI Securities and Futures and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, as well as the branch manager of our Peoria, Arizona location. I hope you, like many of our listeners, have benefited from the outstanding market returns of the last several years. But have you recently become unsettled due to the worldwide geopolitical uncertainty and the looming Federal Reserve interest rate hikes? Have you been frustrated by the lack of income your investments have provided? If you have answered yes to either of these questions, then we can help you. Here at PTI, we offer a unique variety of income-producing securities as well as our proprietary hedging program to protect your assets. So please give me a call at 602-298-1278, 602-298-1278, so that I can explain further the benefits that PTI can offer you and your portfolio.
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Allen. She's AV on the board. Angelica Vlasenko, who spent the first time with her friend, she and Tatiana, are going to give a complete report. Is she calling in to help you with the Super Bowl report?
Oh, no. She's not into it. She's probably sleeping right now.
I guess imagine you two sitting there in front of the Super Bowl all the way to the end. Why are no pictures? S&P Futures up 2075.
I actually have a picture.
Oh, God. NASDAQ Futures up 67. Dow Futures up 150. We're back about a third of the way that we were down on Friday. So I think that's because, well, I'll talk about it in a second here. China was down, but not as bad as it could have been, I guess. DAX up 35.3%, FTSE up 37.5%, CAC around up 23.4%, so muted recovery from Friday, muted. Nikkei down another 1%, 233. Shanghai down 7.7%, 229. Obviously, everybody thought they'd be buried down limit, which I think is like 10, but I'm not positive. They are not. Now, whether the government had to pour in some of the money they were ready to pour in, we don't know as of yet. Maybe we'll never know. Hang Seng up 44.1%. We got bonds, 1.55 here, the 10-year yield. So bonds have not really come down at all. Bund minus 0.43. Japan minus 0.06. Oil, whack, whack. We only go 6 cents today, but 51.50. As Goldman Sachs has cut Exxon to a sell. Nobody likes these oil companies, even though virtually everybody on CNBC said this was going to be the year of the oil companies. And I don't know, OPEC is considering deeper cuts. I think OPEC is, other than wanting them in your bar in Vienna, I think they're pretty much useless these days. That's one man's opinion. Brent down 44 cents, natural gas 187, RBOB gas 150, gold hanging in there, but down some, down 640, still 1581, silver down 24 cents, 1777, copper 253, kind of reflecting the fact that China is not doing so hot right now. AV, what do you got for us, traffic, weather, sports?
Good morning. It's 37 minutes past the hour. 37 degrees right now in Chicago. We're expecting some mix of sun and clouds during the morning. Eventually, it will give way to cloudy skies in the afternoon. Expect some overcast skies with a few showers later at night. There's 30% chances of rain. The high of the day will be 40 and the low is 34. Which is really good, I think, for February in Chicago. Not as good as yesterday, of course. 55 in Phoenix. Sunny day, partially cloudy. Nice as always. The high is 64 and the low is 36. Traffic, we have one accident reported on Upper Walker Drive North at Montrose Street involving CDR bus. And overall traffic is gaining volume. 94 East is getting slower due to the bottleneck on Montrose Avenue at Cicero. If you're heading east through Eisenhower, be aware of traffic delays from Central Avenue to Dendrine and Kennedy. Stevenson North is getting busier. That's what I got for traffic. And, of course, our champions are Chiefs from Kansas City, State Missouri, right?
Well, the president thinks they're from Kansas, but they're really from Missouri.
Yeah.
Just saying, you know.
Yeah, that's what I got for you guys. I hope you'll have a great
Monday.
Well,
you forgot about the Bulls getting hammered by the Raptors? Of course, the Bulls always get hammered by any team that's over 500, so not much of a report there. Yeah. So, you guys made it to the last play. I'm stunned at this, that you guys hung in there for this whole game. But I'd known this, I'd have had you guys invited over to Dr. J's.
What's Dr. J's?
The party yesterday. I never thought you had any interest in watching this game.
Oh. Well, we didn't plan it. It was, you know, like improvising. And we skipped the first part. But it was nice.
Well,
and actually, like, I was surprised. Yes, there were so many people. More people on New Year's Eve, like, outside.
Yeah, well, you know, it's the second biggest, well, other than Thanksgiving, I mean, there's more food and booze going on Super Bowl Sunday than, like I said, at the Myers yesterday, there's usually a million sales in the liquor aisle. There wasn't one sale yesterday.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I mean, it just, that one yellow ticket. David, are you with us?
I'm here.
I don't think you put I think you take everything off sale on Super Bowl Sunday. Just saying. I went to the Costco to get, I asked, this is dealing, well, Audrey hit a cold, so she didn't make it. So this is typical. She goes, well, get some, an appetizer, and then John's wife said, bring some white wine. So I brought some white wine and some red wine. So the Costco is mobbed, right? They had so many people working there at the checkouts, getting people out of there. But the place, every possible appetizer platter or whatever is just flying out the door, David. I mean, would you rather make all this stuff up yourself or go to Costco and then buy the stuff? They couldn't keep that stuff going. I mean, it was just unreal. Places.
And I bet it trimmed out big time. We went to two, but we went like 2 hours before the game. And the lines were really, really short. I mean, like maybe three or four checkout lines and maybe 4 to 6 people in each one. That said, as you point out, shrimp, none. Chicken, none.
Yeah.
Cakes, none.
Yep.
I mean, evidently the rush was all but over, but evidently during the day, and I asked, because we were looking for to bring to the kids, you know, like a cake or something, you know, with football on it or something like that. Well, first of all, they said they weren't allowed to do, obviously, anything with the word Super Bowl.
No.
They hesitated to put anything on, like, big game. If we wanted, we could get, like, a cheesecake, and they would decorate and say football or whatever and stick a few football flags in the cake. But they were really guarded about, you know, any kind of,
trademarks,
you know,
are huge. They won't touch
logo infringement or whatever. And she said the rush in the morning was like, she said they had triple the amount of inventory and they were down to 4 cakes.
Well, the one in Orland opens up at 10. I get there at 10 after 10. I can barely find a spot in this massive lot. Barely have a cart. You go in there and people are, I mean, it's crazed. I mean, it's absolutely crazed. But the,
right.
Anyway, so, but I had a nice time. So you guys end up having a good time?
Yeah, they had a lot of food. There was like 8 people, and they cooked for like 25. And so I ate like crazy. And it was nice. They had 3 TVs going along, and everyone was, you know, enthusiastic. And I talked to one of the kids, because he's a better. I talked to one of the kids in, after the 10-10 halftime. He's a better, and the line on the second half was 27 points, and I urged him to go over, and he was hesitant, but he did it. And it was 31 in the second half, so he was happy. I didn't get a tip, but whatever. I got a take-home doggy bag, so that was good.
Well, somebody last week, I forget the name of the casino or whatever, the sports book, somebody put a $550,000 bet on Kansas City on Tuesday.
Wow.
So they had to move the line from 1 to 1.5. And the hope was, or the rumor was, there was going to be the equivalent size bet or two bets, 200 and 350 coming in and San Francisco on Thursday. So they were reluctant to move it, thinking it would even out. I don't think they ever got those bets. So I'm going to say there was more money on the Kansas City side than the San Francisco's. I don't think they balanced.
Yeah, I have no idea. I'm not a bettor, but this fella got he did under for the game, 52.5, and it was 51, so he won that. He took Kansas City, gave 1.5, he won that. He got the over in the second half, he won that. The only thing he lost on was he took the over on the on the first half. He took the Chiefs and gave a half a point that Ty killed him, so he did lose that.
Well, just for those of you who don't think in terms of, how can I say this without breaking every rule in the world? Market making is somewhat the same as being a bookie. When I say somewhat the same, one is obviously investing in one. Well, I guess you invested in the Chiefs, but the trick is in being a market maker, I'll go back to my day, if you're 3/8, your best day ever is when half the people are selling them to you at 3/8, the other half are buying them at a half. That's the idea. You're making a market. You're not trying to be an investor. You're trying to make a market. And the trick is to find the price where half the people are buying and half the people are selling. And that's, and so when you do a sports book, it's the same thing. So if you're talking 6.5 points and people put $2 million on one team at 6 points, or Kansas City and the other $2 million on the other guys, guess what? No matter who wins, you're going to make 10% of the one side, $2 million, correct?
Right.
You got to pay everything out to the guys who win, the bet plus, you know, what is it? It's 11, it's 10 to 1, right? See, so you, 10-4-1. So you end up, it's 11-4-1, 10-2-1. When I say that, what I'm saying is if you put $1,000 down, you're going to get $1,000 back, correct? Plus.
If you win.
You get your 1,000 plus another 1,000.
Right.
Correct? If you win. Now, on the other side, you end up, why am I having so much trouble with this morning when this is?
If you bet $1,000 and lose, you have to pay $1,100.
Right, you got to pay $1,100. So the point being is they make $100 on a deal. So, but the problem comes is if you have $1 million on one team and $2 million on the other, and the $2 million side wins, because then you got to pay those guys. Now you're an investor, not a bookie, right? And you don't want to do that. So anyway, I think they might have come off. Some places might have come a little unbalanced. That's why I don't want to go through all the time because we want to talk about this market, David. What I'm going to say that the 7.7%, without any seriously obvious Chinese government interference to keep the world afloat, is probably about as good as we could have expected. That
well, no, night. If you read my tout this morning, I did highlight on my world news.
Yes.
Document, they injected $174 billion.
I thought that's what they were prepared to do.
No, no. That's what they issued an official thing that's what they put out. Now, is that enough? I have no idea. Beyond that, you know, they came in with corporate profits were down, manufacturing indexes were down. So, necessarily, since it was a month old number, I can't say necessarily that it attributes to the coronavirus, but you know, things were already slowing. But they put out a government thing in the government news agency that's what they put in.
Well, okay, but the wording was somewhat. I think we're kind of both right on this. The wording was that they were putting in 173 billion, which is $1.2 trillion. And sort of like our Fed was a repo they needed because of something the other day, and they needed the liquidity. Okay, but the hint was if they were also ready to do more, if the market opened down like 12, I don't think they had to do, I guess my point is, David, they didn't have to do more than they had planned before.
Right.
I mean, so people are taking that as a minor positive. In other words, they didn't say here's 173 billion. The thing's still down, locked down 10%. It didn't,
right.
So out of minor wins, it's a minor win. minor. That didn't get worse than it was.
No,
most,
okay.
I mean, most people.
And yet, you know, they're just a lot of the stuff with the virus. I mean, and I'm not minimizing, you know, 900 people die, whatever, 361 or something in China. I'm, you know, I'm not snubbing my nose and taking that lightly. That said, you know, 9,000 cases. I just have a thing here from 2019, from October 1st, 2019 through January 25th, 2020, just in this country, just in the U.S., between 19 million and 26 million flu illnesses.
Yeah, oh yeah.
180,000 to 310,000 flu hospitalizations. Up to 12 million medical visits. And just in this country, 8,800 already died. Their estimate is between 10,000 and 25,000. And we're talking, we're what, 325, 330 million? What are they, 1.8 billion? I mean, And here's a chief economic advisor for Allianz, and he comes in, you know, this is the worst thing and it's spreading everywhere and it's gonna, you know, lower China's GDP by, you know, 1.5% and it'll spread over Europe and it'll spread here and it's gonna lower our GDP from 2.1 to 0.5. You know, and I don't get it. I mean, when you take the numbers versus China's population, and he was including Europe's population as well because the slowdown would spread there and then spread here, and then take these statistics from the CDC just based on our population, which is about a fifth, roughly, of China's. I mean, I can't understand, you know, and this is an experienced person who's been, you know, chief economic advisor at many, many places, you know, for decades. I don't get where they get that, you know, thesis.
Well, I'll try and tell you. The concern is the thing is already mutated once, and what makes you think it's going to stop there? Because that's what happened in 1918. It mutated after it started spreading.
Well, around. What makes me think that it's going to not necessarily stop there, but be minimal is evidence from Ebola, which was a panic, SARS, which was a panic, medical innovation, you know, which is a little bit different, and, you know, hospitalization and medical techniques and diagnosis and, you know, DNA and everything else that is a little bit different than 1918?
There's always a concern that, but when you talk about the flu, hopefully you don't, when you think about it, what percentage of society dies of pneumonia? Even if you have cancer or whatever, the last day you die of pneumonia, right?
Okay.
I'm saying is when you talk about people that die from the flu in this country, you're talking about a lot of people, there's a lot of people that are amazingly compromised. There's a lot of people have heavy drugs for immune systems, any kind of chemotherapy, any kind of, I mean, you name it, that if some nasty flu comes.
But what I'm pointing out, I get what you're saying, and I agree, but when you're talking, let's just say, you know, God forbid, but 12,000, we'll take the low end of CDC, you know, estimates for, in the U.S. only, of deaths, you know, this flu season from October 1st through January 25th, which is already passed, and, you know, you compare that to the panic over, you know, 361 deaths or whatever the number is, and 9,000 cases. I mean, you can't, and the panic over one and the, oh, well, we'll take it because it's understandable. Everyone gets the flu in, you know, flu season. I don't get the comparison.
Well, I mean, as usual, there might be a little more. I think the numbers, first of all, are way worse in China than they're saying.
That could be.
And I think the rapidity, even if you look at the, I mean, again, I don't know if I sent this to you. I don't think I did. There's a New York Times article that I sent it to you. I'll use the term, how's this for a Monday morning? It's a log normal table. Okay, and I mentioned this very early in the show, so maybe I'll try it again. I'll be brief this time. And anything that you pretty much zero in on here, David, is on the, now, what you're talking about is the seasonal flu.
Right.
All right, the seasonal flu.
Influenza.
Right, on the bottom, what's the bottom line? The bottom line of the thing. Across the bottom line of this chart, graph, whatever, David's the chart man. Going from bottom to top to bottom is the fatality rate. It's a log scale. And the bottom is the amount of people on average that are infected by one person. Okay? And there's an amazingly amount of different infection rates. For instance, a seasonal flu, a person who has it normally infects 1.5 other people. Right?
Okay.
A common cold, you infect 1.7 other people. All right. The swine flu was a little bit somewhere between the seasonal flu and the common cold, maybe 1.6 people. Transmissions of this thing, because it's so early, are between 1.5 and 3.5. So it's somewhere higher because it's moving pretty fast. Somewhere between it's worse than any of those three. Okay, not by a whole hell of a lot, but some in there. It's right about okay. Where Spanish flu was, where SARS was. Not as bad as polio, not as bad as smallpox. It's a little worse than bird flu, a little worse than MERS, and a little about the same as Ebola. Okay, nowhere near like chickenpox, where the average person infects like 8 other people. Measles is by far on the end of the chart. The average person who gets measles, if you gave measles to 20 people in this country, the average measles person infects 15 other people.
Holy cow.
if you went into a CTA subway car 2 hours before they were going to use it and you had measles and you sneezed in the middle and touched any of the metal, you know, things on the way out the door things, that thing is wildly contagious 2 hours later when people walk in there. Virtually no other disease does that. The droplets in the air drop to the ground. I guess if you licked the floor, you might have been always going to do that. But now, on the other hand, measles is out of, the fatality rate in measles is like, it's less than 1%. They think the fatality rate of this thing is between, is below 3%, but it's higher than 1 so far. So where it lands on that scale is the key thing. Now, polio, 10% of the people die. Spanish flu, 10% of the people die. Smallpox, almost 40% of the people die. Bird flu, 60% of the people died. I don't remember that, do you? There was 60% of the people died?
Doesn't China have that as well?
Well, when you say have it...
I know they have swine flu because all the hogs are dying.
Well, but there's a swine flu that only affects hogs, and then there's the one that jumps to people, which it sort of rarely does. But all these things this is somewhat interesting. I mean, it's deadly, for God's sake. But, smallpox, I'd say the one that's furthest up and out on the page is smallpox. One person infects 5 people, and oh, by the way, 40% of the people die. that's about as bad as it gets. Even Ebola, you only affect 1.5 other people, but then 50% of it dies. So it's, right.
I'm just surprised. Let's put it this way. From a technical standpoint, which is what I focus on, market was way overdone. I don't use the term overbought. I don't believe that the term exists. But it was very extended. Too many stocks, too many ETFs, sharply above, 50-day, 200-day moving averages. It needed to come in. There needed to be some reversion from to the mean. We needed a trigger. This was a trigger. We got it. I'm not saying it's over. It could certainly go another 2, 3%. I think that would represent a buying opportunity. But, if I was a major investor in ETFs, which I'm not, I tend to stick to the individual issues more than anything. I would be, more concerned about, a Sanders victory by any kind of big margin here and in Iowa and in New Hampshire and, the possible psychology of that than I would be about coronavirus, and I'm not minimizing that as well.
Question for you. When you talk about issues to our, we only have a minute, to our companies here, and the planes not going to China, bigger problem with the people not going, the fannies in the seats, or bigger problems with the cargo not going? If somebody needs a part for their machine, they can't get it.
I would presume both, but bigger, I would not be able to estimate.
I mean, nobody's even talking about what's in the hold of the plane.
Sure.
I mean,
no, it affects commerce.
Yeah.
There's no question. You know, Delta's saying, hey, we're not going to China until the end of April. That's a factor, whether it's cargo or fannies.
What percentage of Delta and United's earnings come from the Asian flights or China flights?
A lot bigger in United than Delta. I think Delta's business, I believe, is 6% to China and about 3% of their profits. I don't know United, but I know it's bigger.
Well, if you're going to Asia from here, you're pretty much going United. I mean, you could go Singapore or something, but I mean, Europe, you got a choice, but Asia. All right, David, thank you very much. S&P futures up 18. We've been as high as 21. NASDAQ up 60. We'll be back tomorrow. Stocks and Jacks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. JetBlue Airways. It's not the only way to fly, but it should be. Visit jetblue.com. Empower HR, your human resources partner. That's empowerhr.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. BDL Compliance Consulting. Visit bdlcc.com. DAX Research. Listen to David Andelman on Mondays and Thursdays and go to dacsresearch.net.